It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. There are many emerging companies that blur the lines of for-profit endeavor with a nonprofit mission. These social entrepreneurs, as they are called, are concerned with both financial sustainability and social impact. I'm joined now in Studio A by Tim Zack. He's the director of the Institute for Social Innovation at CMU. Tim Zack, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also joining us is Ian Rosenberger, founder of Thread, an East Liberty-based company recycling plastic bottles in Haiti for use in the manufacturing of apparel. Ian Rosenberger, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And if you have a comment or question for our guests, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. Tim Zack, what is social entrepreneurship?
Well, before we even think about getting to the definition of social entrepreneurship, which has only been around in the public lexicon for since about the mid-1990s, we perhaps have to even think about what entrepreneurs are, and that's a term that's been around since the early 1700s.
Oh, fair enough.
We might think about entrepreneurs as just simply people who build organizations to address the needs of people that are not adequately met by existing solutions. And we customarily think of entrepreneurs as those who have a motivation for financial gain, and perhaps as a nice byproduct, there's some social impact. Where social entrepreneurs differ, perhaps, is that they're still addressing the needs of people, that their needs are not adequately met by existing solutions, but their primary motivation is on social impact that is financially sustainable over a long period of time, because these are oftentimes very difficult, vexing problems that require novel approaches to be applied over a very long period of time to have the kind of positive impact that those social entrepreneurs are looking for.
So the social part of the entrepreneurship then is a philanthropic endeavor, but one that is done with the idea that there needs to be a business model in place that makes it sustainable.
Well, it really does, because we're talking about very challenging, difficult problems. And, you know, my shorthand for this might be, no money, no mission. If you want to address really big problems, customarily you're going to need to be able to generate significant financial funds to be able to adequately address those over a long period of time.
And what's the difference between social venture and social entrepreneurship?
Social venture is just the organization that is created by the social entrepreneur. And I think this is a really important distinction. Entrepreneurs fundamentally build organizations that can be sustained and perhaps even past the time that they're ultimately involved in it. Steve Jobs, for example, someone asked him what his greatest accomplishment was at Apple, and he didn't mention the iPad or the iPhone or any of the other products. He said it was the creation of Apple, the organization that would be able to last beyond my days. And so social ventures are merely the organizations that social entrepreneurs create to continue to address those problems and have impact on social issues over a long period of time.
And so the advantages of being for-profit with a social focus rather than a nonprofit are?
I think of nonprofit, for-profit, hybrid organizations that are increasingly coming to the fore, like B corporations, as merely legal designations. When I talk to social entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs of any kind, I say, pick a legal designation that gives you the best chance to win, the best chance to be successful. And so perhaps that's as a for-profit designation, perhaps it's as a nonprofit, perhaps something in between. But it's merely creating a context under which you have the best opportunity to be successful over a long period of time.
And before I go to Ian for a practical example of how this works, are these companies making an impact in Pittsburgh, Tim?
They are. We've got so many great examples of social entrepreneurs here in Pittsburgh. We've got one of the most legendary social entrepreneurs in Bill Strickland at the Manchester Craftsman's Guild. But if you wanted a very visible example of a social venture here in Pittsburgh, any day during the summer, If you want to rent a kayak, Kayak Pittsburgh is a social venture that has
been there, done that.
The byproduct of Venture Outdoors, and has continued to grow and scale and is completely in support of their mission.
So anybody who goes over to the north side, goes down by the Allegheny River, rents one of those kayaks, they can think about that as they're rowing along the river.
Absolutely.
Ian Rosenberger, explain how you ended up founding your company, Thread.
Sure, yeah. Well, after the earthquake in Haiti in 2010, I got the chance to travel down there. And while there, spent a week and fell in love with the country and the people. And the two things I see the most when I travel to the developing world, and I've had the chance to see a lot of really interesting places now, are poverty and trash. And, you know, in looking at how organizations are approaching poverty globally, you know, in a place like Haiti, where you see thousands of nonprofits, NGOs focusing on social problems, but not a lot of progress being made, we saw an opportunity to pick up a lot of trash, create a lot of jobs, and have a social impact at the same time. So the idea for Thread was born out of a need to create jobs for the people that, you know, we were coming to know and love, you know, friends and family in Haiti in, you know, almost 4 years ago now.
So explain how this works. How is the trash turned into something, a product that people can use, and how are the people of Haiti getting involved in opportunities to maybe make a living from doing this?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, trash, plastic trash at its most basic, is just polyester. You know, when you drink from a water bottle, you're drinking from what is the same exact chemical thing as polyester fabric.
Same thing that can go into a beautiful leisure suit.
Yeah, right, that I'm wearing right now for all your listeners. No, I think that that one of the great discoveries when we essentially went home and Googled this, right, was what can we turn plastic bottles into? One of the amazing things that we found was
so you literally went to a computer and Googled that?
I'm a millennial, man. That's what we do.
Of course.
Yeah. We came back and literally Googled it. We found Patagonia, right? The kind of the leader. And Patagonia is a B Corp, just like Thread. You know, we found a leader in kind of social awareness and a company that was trying to do amazing things. And they've been taking plastic bottles and turning them into fabric for quite some time. But what we found was...
So a Patagonia jacket, for example?
Absolutely.
Could be made out of this?
Yeah, absolutely. As well as any range of things that are made of polyester, right? Anything from bags, you know, luggage to jackets, to pants, shirts, underwear, socks, anything you can think of. You know, we're probably all wearing something that can be made from a Thread bottle right now. But the upshot to what we're trying to do is the idea that not only can we create something that's recycled, right, and environmentally friendly, but we can create something that's having a social impact, that's creating jobs for people.
So you went down to Haiti and you were exposed to this, but you were working as a TV producer.
Yes.
So you're down there covering a story, and then all of a sudden the story hits you in a way that explain to us how that then morphs into your deciding to make this dramatic life change for you, you know, for you personally.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, at the center, I think, of every social business are humans, right? And I think, you know, Tim, who, by the way, is a terrific mentor of mine and ours, is, you know, said it best about Steve Jobs, you know, the idea that his pride was the Apple as an organization. At the center of all of this are people. So, you know, I came to this almost by accident. I was a television producer and working for an advertising agency here in Pittsburgh, and in taking all the photos that I was taking photos of people, and met a kid on my first trip down there named Tossie, who was dying of a tumor that he had on his face. Through me and a bunch of friends I have here in Pittsburgh, we created an organization called Team Tossie, where we got Tossie all fixed up, and we brought him back to Haiti after his surgery here in Pittsburgh. And it was when we brought Tossie back to the neighborhood that he was from, in Cité Soleil, which is one of the poorer slums in the Western Hemisphere, we realized that unless Tossie had a dignified job, that he was going to end up the same way that a lot of young men do in Cité Soleil, which is usually to die young and violently. So in realizing that we needed to create jobs for Tossie, and realizing that there aren't a lot of jobs available in Haiti, you know, a country that right now is suffering from about 65% unemployment, we realized that we had to create those jobs. And in conversations with folks like Tim and, you know, Bill Strickland here in Pittsburgh, we saw some low-hanging fruit, and we decided to go for it.
It's Essential Pittsburgh here on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking here in studio with Tim Zach, the director of the Institute for Social Innovation at CMU, and also Ian Rosenberger, whom you just heard. He is founder of Thread, an East Liberty-based company recycling plastic bottles in Haiti for use in manufacturing of apparel. If you'd like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Again, that's 412-246-2002. Tim Zach, how can a social mission focus for a company, impact a company's bottom line?
Well, let's make no mistake. Social entrepreneurship, like entrepreneurship, is a challenging undertaking under even the very best of conditions. And what we're beginning to find, however, is that there are certain kinds of unmet needs where the consumers are more willing to perhaps purchase products or services from companies that have a social mission as well. And Ian mentioned Patagonia. That's a terrific example. Ben & Jerry's is a great example. Tom's Shoes, that just recently got a lot of publicity for, for every sale of shoes, they provide a pair of shoes to someone in an emerging economy in the developing world. There are certain situations where there are opportunities for social entrepreneurs in the pursuit of their social mission to also find untapped markets that provide them with financial opportunities that their competitors haven't identified yet.
And what are the challenges in competing with for-profit companies, other companies that are not necessarily doing this with the same kind of altruistic mission that that Ian has here?
Well, I should mention that we're a for-profit company too. So go ahead, Tim.
Well, I was going to say that when social entrepreneurs get out into the world, right, they're in the same shark tank with the rest of the sharks,
right?
And they fundamentally need to compete with any other companies or any other entities that happen to operate in the same space that they do. There's no breaks, right, for social entrepreneurs. They fundamentally have to compete and find opportunities that they can succeed at, like any other entrepreneur.
So, Ian, then how do you find investors? Or people that will make investments for this kind of work that you're doing?
Sure, much like anybody else. I mean, we have to prove that the goods that we're creating are inherently more valuable because they have a social mission, right? It's not a situation of hugs and rainbows. This isn't just for altruism. And I think as a society, we need to begin to acknowledge the fact that by paying attention to the stories of the people in the developing world, that we have a huge opportunity to create immense amounts of small business by creating goods and services that are more valuable because they come from those people, whether that's in a place like Larimer in Pittsburgh or a place like Port-au-Prince. So we find investors by proving that the stories of the products that we tell, because they're told from the perspective of the poor, are inherently more valuable. And there's a bottom line attached to that you can prove. To this point, finding investors is certainly a slog with any organization, with any business.
So is it then safe to say that what you're doing is running a for-profit company, but with a conscience?
Yeah, and I feel like I honestly feel like every business has some degree of social entrepreneurship to it. We're all creating goods and services, and for some benefit, and I certainly agree they should. That said, by focusing on that, I think we have an opportunity to create value for customers that maybe they haven't seen before.
Some of the biggest social problems that face society in the world today are also some of the biggest business opportunities, if you want to think about it that way. When you talk about clean water, shelter, food, healthcare, education, some of the biggest issues of our times
climate
are actually
change.
In many parts of the world, perhaps some of the biggest business opportunities as well.
But as people approach these opportunities, I mean, does there need to be maybe some sort of police work there, for example, to make sure that companies aren't taking advantage of the people that really need these services? For example, allegedly a company like Halliburton goes into a place like Iraq and they're supposed to provide clean water and ways for our soldiers to do their laundry, and are accused of all sorts of impropriety, not necessarily proven, but the accusations are there. And we see this in other areas. So if you're going into an area of need, what's to say that a company is going to approach that and be responsible?
That's a great question.
Well, this is where you're absolutely right, and perhaps where as this field continues to evolve, the need for governments to put policies and regulations and some standards in place certainly has a place. And as more of these ventures get into the marketplace and people become more familiar with the way that they operate, those kinds of norms begin to develop and become reinforced.
I think it's about transparency. I think that actually is self-policed by your customers. You know, your customers aren't stupid. They certainly know when a company is being transparent, when it's not. And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find people who would look at Halliburton and say, oh, they're doing a ton of good, right? But I think, you know, by being 100% transparent with our customers and kind of pulling back the curtain, you have the ability to tell a story in a way that makes them feel like you're doing something that's real and authentic.
I think social entrepreneurs are very, at least the ones that I come in contact with, because of their motivation, are very sensitized to the fact that they are fundamentally dealing with people. And they're fundamentally dealing with people in some of the most based issues that they have to address. And so it's important to be very careful and conscious and, as you mentioned, transparent about how you deal responsibly with the people that are affected by those ventures.
Mm-hmm. That's Tim Zack, the director of the Institute for Social Innovation at CMU, joining us. Also, Ian Rosenberger with us in studio, founder of Thread, an East Liberty-based company recycling plastic bottles in Haiti for use in the manufacturing of apparel. Ian, when we think of products that are ethically produced, they often carry a higher price tag than the competitors. Mm-hmm. Is that an issue for Thread? And if so, how do you compete and entice consumers to look past the price?
Yeah, that's a great question. What we're realizing is that the general tolerance for what we call the Whole Foods markup, right, is about 15 to 20%. Right, people go to Whole Foods because they know what they're getting. Right, they know that they're not getting any high fructose corn syrup. They know that they're getting organic, you know, berries or beef or fruit, vegetables, whatever.
All of which is good, but then you look at how much more you have to pay.
Right.
And for some people, that's a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. And I certainly, it's one of the things we think a lot about. How do we offer goods at a price that's comparable or competitive with kind of the traditional good? And I think what we're finding is that organizations more and more, our customers, large apparel brands, are looking for ways to tell the story of their products. And they're desperately trying to get more responsible. You know, you look at Walmart, for example. Walmart lost up to 15 million customers in 2010 because they weren't viewed by their customer base as being responsible enough. So you have these large corporations who are hurting. They don't know how to get more responsible. So what we're finding is they are more apt to take what would be a price hike, right, and pull the marketing of the goods that we're selling to them out of their marketing and PR budget so they can keep their bottom line retail price the same. So, you know, what they used to spend on advertising, they might now spend on a campaign with a company like Thread.
And Tim, what is the potential for collaboration between these kinds of companies, the company that Ian is running, and traditional nonprofits?
I think there's a lot of opportunity for collaboration in this particular space at both ends of the spectrum. For collaboration with nonprofits, those organizations customarily have, if you want to think about it, a lot of on-the-ground community-based information about the kinds of needs that exist and the way to best address some of those needs. And social entrepreneurs desperately need that kind of on-the-ground community-based insight. At the same time, as Ian mentioned, you know, larger companies are looking for what the next innovation is, and perhaps how to identify new ways to address consumer needs and address new markets. And social entrepreneurs are often the lighthouse or the headlights that give them some indications, perhaps, about which ways markets are going, and that's also very valuable as well.
And is there a difference between the challenges of the social entrepreneurs and those faced by those involved in traditional entrepreneurship?
Well, obviously, social entrepreneurs have more than, you know, in some ways, entrepreneurship has a pretty simple bottom line. Did I make money or not? Right? Am I consistently enough in the black to satisfy myself and my investors? Social entrepreneurs have a similar and really the same objective, but they also have the social mission and the types of measures that they're tracking to figure out whether they're truly having social impact that wouldn't have happened anyway. And there are even some social ventures that claim to have a triple bottom line where they're very interested in environmental or sustainability impacts as well. And so in many ways, not only from a measurement of impact perspective, but perhaps, you know, as Ian mentioned, from an investment perspective and the way that they govern their organizations, social entrepreneurs probably have things a little bit more complex and a little more complicated than a typical entrepreneur would.
I would agree with that.
We've been talking with Tim Zack, who is the director of the Institute for Social Innovation at CMU, and also Ian Rosenberger, founder of Thread, an East Liberty-based company recycling plastic bottles in Haiti for the use in the manufacturing of apparel. The broader topic being these social entrepreneurs. It's a very interesting discussion. And gentlemen, I want to thank both of you for being here to take part in it.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's been terrific.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Coming up, a look at some of the city's top trends of the past year. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.